So, deep breaths. It is all going to be all right. So, first up, we're going to go ahead and launch all our bookmarks. And since this is a live show, not like Friday, we did a pre-recorded show. But since this is a live show, I'm just going to go ahead and SSH into SDF. Then once you get connected, you just go ahead and launch com. Then you try G for go to, type Anon Radio, hit enter. Boom, you are in the Anon Radio room. You get to hang out with cool people, like me and Jazzmez and probably X1. And Tobe's usually here. And Ratsu usually too. So SMJ occasionally gets in for his lunch break on time. But anyway, thanks a lot for tuning in, and if you want to talk or hang out, feel free to join the comm room. Cool. Let's start how we always start. World news. With the world news. Alright. So first to us, coming from China, or coming to us from routers, I guess, is China and Russia have held off on congratulating Biden. U.S. allies rally around. So Beijing, this is coming to us from Beijing. China and Russia held off congratulating U.S. President-elect Joe Biden on Monday, with Beijing saying it would follow usual custom in its response, and the Kremlin noting incumbent Donald Trump's vow to pursue legal challenges. Democrat Biden clinched through enough states to win the presidency on Saturday and has begun making plans for when he takes office on January 20th. Trump has not conceded defeat and plans rallies to build support for legal challenges. Some of the United States' biggest and closest allies in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia quickly congratulated Biden over the weekend despite Trump's refusal to concede, as did some Trump allies, including Israel and Saudi Arabia. Whew, man, my allergies have been acting up fierce, so I've got some tea. I've got Da Hong Pao too. Also, the Da Hong Pao is the good tea. It really evolves each steeping, which makes it really fun to drink. Alright, let's jump over here to France. The Guardian's reporting there's concern over a French bill that cracks down on photos identifying police. A proposed bill in France that would make it illegal to disseminate photographs or videos identifying police and gendarmes with intent to harm is danger to press freedom, critics have warned. The measure comes amid growing concern about allegations of police violence in the country. It's outlined in draft global security legislation to be presented to the Assemblée Nationale next week. Article 24 of the bill would introduce up to a year in prison and a maximum €45,000 fine for disseminating by any means or medium whatsoever with the aim or harming their physical or psychological integrity, the image of the face, or any other identifying element of an officer of the National Police or member of the National Gendarmerie when engaged in a police operation. This clause states that the officer must be identifiable and the intention of the disseminating the video must be deliberate, directly seeking to harm them. So, this is, I think it sounds a little chilling, but that's something going on in France. I'm going to blow my nose. One sec. There we go. Sorry about that. Going back to routers, Hong Kong's got some news. Hong Kong pro-democracy legislators have threatened mass resignations amid reports Beijing plans to disqualify four opposition lawmakers who've been accused by the ruling camp of potentially unlawful filibustering in the legislature. Earlier on Monday, local news site HK01 reported, citing unnamed sources, that Beijing might make the move later this week in the latest squeeze on opposition politicians in the former British colony. The four have been accused by pro-Beijing politicians of filibustering to obstruct legislation, which has long been a tactic in Hong Kong. Some pro-Beijing lawmakers say it may be contrary to the oath of office. The report did not detail a specific incident or incidents of alleged attempts to obstruct legislation, nor say what legal mechanism Beijing would use to disqualify them. The Hong Kong government did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Hello, Exiled and X1. Thanks for joining in comm. Hope you're having a good day. The pro-democracy camp currently has 19 seats in the 70-seat legislature. So we'll see how that goes. It's very interesting to see. It's neat to watch other countries work through problems like this, because in the U.S., or at least since I'm in the U.S., I don't get to see the outside perspective, and so it's always neat to see the outside perspective from others. So this is a cool story. It's not death and destruction. I thought we could always use a break. This comes to us from The Guardian. Super rare 100-year-old carrier pigeon message found in France. This is kind of neat, and they've got a photo of it if you go to The Guardian. A couple out for a walk in eastern France have discovered a tiny capsule containing a message dispatched by a Prussian soldier over a century ago using a carrier pigeon. Really sounds like a Doctor Who episode. The message from an infantry soldier based at Ingersheim, written in German in a barely legible hand, detailed military maneuvers, apparently during the First World War, and was addressed to a superior officer, said Dominique Jardy, curator of the Ling Museum at Orbury in eastern France. The date is marked 16th of July, but the year is not perfectly clear, appearing to be written as either 1916 or 1910. The First World War took place from 1914 to 1918. The message reads, Platoon Potthoff receives fire as they reach the western border of the parade ground. Platoon Potthoff takes up fire and retreats after a while. In Fechtwald, half a platoon was disabled. Platoon Potthoff retreats with heavy losses. At the time, Ingersheim, now in France's Grand Est department, was part of Germany. A couple found the tiny capsule with its well-preserved contents in September this year in a field in Ingersheim, said Jardy, who raved about the super-rare discovery. They brought it into the nearest museum, the one at Orbi, dedicated to one of the bloodiest battles of the First World War. Jardy had enlisted the help of a German friend to decrypt the message, he said. The tiny piece of paper and capsule will become part of the museum's permanent display. So this is really cool. And the image is, it's pretty neat. It's like, oh, wow, that's totally cool. And it's lined paper, which I think is kind of neat, too. I would have pictured it to be not. Anyway. Alrighty. Keep on going here. I rushed to eat my lunch so that I could be on, and I think it's my digestion is messing with my speech. Oh, that's good tea, though. All right. I'm making too many mouth noises. I hate it when people do that. All right. Here we go. Our friends at the World Socialist website let us know here, German Public Service Union ensures smooth operation of public transport despite resurgence of coronavirus. Under capitalism, profits come first. Ain't that the truth? In order to ensure that workers attend their workplaces despite a surge in coronavirus infections, their children have to go to school, which in turn means public transport has to function. The key role in ensuring that public transport runs on time in Germany during the COVID-19 pandemic is played by the country's main public service trade union, Verdi, United Service Union. In October, thousands of public transport workers went on strike in numerous German cities. The short-term warning strikes and protest actions were not only directed against miserable wages and poor living conditions, the danger of infection by the coronavirus due to completely inadequate security measures increasingly became the focus of the dispute. Verdi tried to dampen the growing anger of workers with a nationwide campaign to accompany its contract negotiations for 2020. It organized isolated, regionally based strikes and phony forms of ineffectual industrial action. The main aim was to prevent a combined mobilization of bus, streetcar, and metro drivers with municipal and federal public service workers, a total of 2.3 million, whose contracts had all been negotiated by Verdi at the same time. First, Verdi agreed a sellout of federal and municipal public service workers. Now the union is doing the same for transport workers. I'm so out of juice. This article, I love the World Socialist website, but their stories are so tedious to read sometimes because they just go on and on and on. This is probably like a 1,000-word article. Anyway. You can read it on the World Socialist website if you are so inclined. I give up. Sorry, guys. All right, France 20... What did I eat? Or what is going on? I'm just feeling I am not feeling it. Alright, we'll just keep on pushing through. Ivory Coast Constitutional Council ratifies disputed presidential win for Alassane Ouattara. Oh, that's a fun name. I'll put that in comm for you. So, main opposition figures are facing criminal charges after denouncing the October 31st vote and creating a rival government in protest. Opposition groups say Ouattara violated the Constitution, which limits presidents to two terms. Ouattara says the approval of a new constitution in 2016 allows him to restart his mandate. At least three people were killed today in clashes in Ivory Coast between rival communities over President Alassane Ouattara's contested re-election. So, it's good. I hope they figure it out. But yeah, it definitely sounds fishy that it's like, oh, we adopted a new constitution, so I get to be president again, right? Yeah, that seems like a dangerous game. Boris Johnson's making news. not in the best way possible, though. Prime Minister Boris Johnson's expected to suffer a heavy defeat in Parliament's upper chamber today over laws allowing him to breach Britain's EU exit treaty, a proposal which has been criticized by U.S. President-elect Joe Biden. The Internal Market Bill is designed to protect trade between Britain and four nations after Brexit. Contains clauses ministers say are needed to protect Northern Ireland, but would also break international law in a specific and limited way. The House of Lords will vote around 1900 GMT on whether to strip those clauses from the bill. Hey, what do you know? That's us. That's right now. On whether to strip those clauses from the bill. Johnson's government is widely expected to lose, but it's not backing down and may add the clauses back in next month and try to force them in. The publication of the bill in September provoked criticism, some saying it would wreck Britain's international standing. Many saw the bill as a negotiating gambit to win concessions from the EU and wider negotiations on a trade deal. Brussels has launched legal action against Britain over the proposals. We talked about that a little while ago, too. All right. And in Bolivia, Evo Morales heads home after a socialist president sworn in. Remember, he was living in exile. Former longtime Bolivian leader Evo Morales crossed the border back into Bolivia today, ending a year in exile after a close ally and member of his MAS Socialist Party was sworn in as president. And the photo shows him in a crush or a rush, you know, a crowd of people being pushed in, and he has a mask that looks very sturdy, but it's pulled down to his mouth. His nose isn't covered, and then his fist is raised up and the elbow is bumping into the head of a woman who's wearing a mask properly. A guy in front of him in a suit is wearing a mask properly, but the guy to his right and the people behind him are all not wearing masks. So it's funny because in this quarantine times, that's what you notice. It's like, wow, look at all these people out without masks on. What are they thinking? What's going to happen? Anyway, he is quoted as saying, "Today is one of the most important days of my life. To be returning to the country that I love so much fills me with happiness." New President Luis Arce has said that Morales will play no role in his government. He crossed the border from Argentina, where he's been in exile, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, or 1400 GMT, and is expected to head to his rural stronghold in Chaper. So this is pretty good. It's cool. I'm glad he's able to go home and hang out, live there. Now, of course, here's the fun and exciting break. Let's talk about sports. I don't know. I just thought I'd throw this in. Ireland captain Johnny Sexton says Friday's opening Autumn Nations Cup clash with Wales will be between two sides that are hurting after bruising defeats in their final Six Nation encounters. 35-year-old fly half, I don't know what that means, is set to make a landmark 100th test appearance. I don't know what that is. He has 93 caps for Ireland and 6 for the British and Irish Lions. Ireland's 35-27 defeat in Paris last month cost them a chance to win the Six Nations title. However, they finished third in the table, whereas Wales in the first Six Nations campaign under Wayne Pivic went from 2019 Grand Slam winners to second from bottom, winning just one of their 5 matches. Welsh took action on Sunday, announcing the defense coach Byron Hayward would be leaving immediately, just a year after replacing the highly successful Sean Edwards. So, those are all words, and I know that they mean something to someone. But I'm going to need to get a translator. Exiled! All right. You know what? We're going to play some music. What do you
get
think
the news
about?
Over with. I want to hear the music.
I know. What do you think about that? We're gonna play some music. Let's see, what are we going to listen to? Well, I know. This is a song from a really cool dude. Well, no. He beat his son. We're going to pick a different song. Screw that noise. How about... Oh, I know. He's dead, so it's okay. This is Tom Petty. You don't know how it feels.
To Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You don't know how it feels. It's a good little song. I like it a lot. Yeah, saw him a few times whenever he came through Texas. So it was a good time. Let's do a little bit of domestic news, U.S. news, and then we'll jump back into some more world news. We've got about 7-8 minutes before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe kicks off, and it's always a good fun. It's always a fun show. Definitely worth checking out and listen to it. Probably, I listen to it, 6 or 7 days a week. I'm only Monday through Friday, so you're hearing me today, fresh off the weekend, 1900 to 1930 UTC, and Tobe picks up 1930 to 20. And then, depending on the day, there's different people on. But today, I believe, is Harry Larry. So, but check out anonradio.net for this story. All right, first up, the AP's reporting Tropical Storm Etta dumps rain on an already flooded Florida. That's right. Heavy rain from Tropical Storm Etta caused dangerous flooding Monday across Florida's most densely populated urban areas, straining cars and swamping entire neighborhoods with fast-rising water that had no place to drain. The system made landfall in the Florida Keys and posed a serious threat across South Florida, which was already drenched from more than 14 inches of rain last month. Etta could drop an additional 6 to 12 inches, forecasters said. That's 15 to 30 centimeters. It was far worse than we could have ever imagined, and we were prepared, said Arby Walker, a 27-year-old student whose Fort Lauderdale apartment was filled with 5 or 6 inches of water. It took us 20 minutes to navigate out of our neighborhood due to the heavy flooding in our area. Floodwaters also submerged half of his sister's car. Etta hit land late Sunday as it blew over lower Matecumbe in the middle of the chain of small islands that form the Keys. The storm moved into the Gulf of Mexico early Monday, near where the Everglades meet the sea, with maximum sustained winds of 65 miles an hour or 100 kilometers. It was centered south of Naples, moving north-northwest at 13 miles an hour. So, it's a major hurricane. Lots of storming going on. Welcome, Harry Larry, to the calm. Domestic news. And you know it. Boop, boop. All right. Additional news we got here. Donald Trump's refusal to concede sparks transition sabotage fears. This comes to us from The Guardian. Donald Trump's refusal to acknowledge his loss in the 2020 election has fed concerns that the presidential transition would be sabotaged as a Trump appointee refused to sign off on funding for the transition, and the Trump campaign announced an expanded legal strategy in a quest to reverse the election result. Center for Presidential Transition, a nonpartisan advisory board, urged the Trump administration on Sunday to begin the handoff to staff supporting Joe Biden, whose victory continued to grow in a magnitude as states completed their ballot counts. We urged the Trump administration to immediately begin the post-election transition process and the Biden team to take full advantage of the resources available under the Presidential Transition Act, the Transition Center said in a letter Sunday. This is a hard-fought campaign, but history is replete with examples of presidents who emerge from such campaigns graciously assist their successors. Neither Trump nor his campaign nor political appointee has the power to stop the transition. There's no sign that the basic step towards Biden's installation as president were at risk of interruption, but non-cooperation by the Trump administration could slow the ability of some agencies to act on directives by Biden in essential areas such as pandemic response and the reinstatement of environmental regulations, protections for migrants, and international accords. A Trump appointee named Emily Murphy, who is administrator of the General Services Administration, has refused to sign a letter allowing the Biden team to formally begin its work. The Washington Post first reported, paperwork would release millions of dollars for use in the transition process and give Biden's team access to government officials and office space and equipment. Action by Trump administration officials to initiate the transition seemed unlikely without the assent of Trump himself, who has made no in-person public statement in the days since the election was called, but who has tweeted false accusations of fraud and pressured campaign staff to expand his challenges to the election. So, very spooky stuff. I'm sure we will find out more. Usually I don't like talking about political stuff that much because, I mean, you see that everywhere. It's like you don't have to come to an on-radio to check that out. You can just flip on the boob tube. We like to talk about cool stuff that's news to me, you know. Usually it's sad, but hey, what are you going to do? All right, we got about 5 minutes. Let's go through the headlines, the rapid-fire section. Queen of crime, Agatha Christie, goes to Bollywood. I love Bollywood movies, so this is a fun one. A murder takes place in a misty Himalayan hill resort. As the whodunit unfolds, a couple almost unwittingly begins sleuthing to get to the bottom of the crime. And the story is based on a novel by the world's most celebrated crime writer. That's all Indian filmmaker Vishal Bhardwaj is willing to reveal now about his upcoming film, based on a novel by the queen of crime, Agatha Christie. So this is kind of cool. And it's also the first time that Agatha Christie Limited, which looks after the author's estate, has franchised her stories to an Indian filmmaker. Done many adaptations across the world, and every country brings its own flavor to the piece. I have no doubt that this will be the same, James Pritchard, Christie's great-great-great-grandson and CEO of the estate, told me. Bhardwaj, 55, is one of India's most exciting filmmakers. Over the past two decades, he's directed and produced 15 films, including three modern-day adaptations of Shakespeare's plays, Makbul, based on Macbeth, Omkara on Othello, and Haider on Hamlet, which have cult followings among fans. After Omkara's release, Peter Bradshill, film critic of The Guardian, wrote that transferring Othello to a modern-day feudal Indian village appeared to be appropriate because Bollywood, with its liking for ingenious fantasy and romance, has often seemed to me to resemble in style nothing so much as a late Shakespearean play. So pretty cool. Also, COVID vaccine, allegedly, milestone. Vaccine offers 90% protection. A lot of people I know say no to vaccines, at least this first round. The first effective coronavirus vaccine can prevent more than 90% of people from getting COVID-19, a preliminary analysis shows. The developers, Pfizer and BioNTech, described it as a great day for science and humanity. Their vaccine had been tested on 43,500 people in six countries, and no safety concerns have been raised. Companies plan to apply for emergency approval to use the vaccine by the end of the month. No vaccine has gone from the drawing board to being proven highly effective in such a short period of time. Still huge challenges ahead, but the announcement has been warmly welcomed, with scientists describing themselves smiling ear to ear, and some suggesting life could be back to normal by spring. So, we'll see how that goes. You can read more details over there at the BBC. We're just at the edge of out of time, so we'll just go through, we won't go as in-depth. BBC's reporting three Russian soldiers were killed in a shooting on a base near Voronezh, yeah. Greetings, Comrade SMJ. An officer was killed with an axe before two soldiers were fatally shot near the southern city. The suspect named PTE Anan Makarov was based at the Baltimore Air Base, investigators say. So, sad news there. Apple has put an iPhone supplier on probation for labor violations. Yeah, this is news to me for sure. Apple Taiwanese firm Pegatron has asked students to work night shifts and overtime at one of its plants in mainland China. Apple added the contractor had falsified paperwork and misclassified some of the workers to disguise the violations. Pegatron said that once it became aware of the issue, it was fixed, but Apple says it will not award the firm any new business until further corrective actions are completed. Pegatron is one of a handful of companies involved in the assembly of iPhones. That's kind of about all the time we got. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow. Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then. Means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello, welcome, one and all. It is June 13th, 2020.